You are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of July 8, 2014. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. We've got a super special episode today just for you, you lucky Punk News listeners. Of course, with me is my partner in crime, who's here with me all the time, the guy who makes stuff happen, managing editor Adam White. Adam White, how are you doing today on this wonderful summer evening? You know, the lightning bugs are in the air. Young lovers are getting together. It's love in the air all over. How are you feeling tonight, Adam White?
I'm not seeing any of this love. Where you are sounds way more interesting than where I am.
Is it because you're in Canada, the land of hate?
I guess. I mean, is Philly like San Francisco and like in the summer of love? Is that what's going on?
I guess people think of San Francisco as a friendly place, but I would actually say overall, San Francisco is one of the least friendliest cities in the United States, maybe not as bad as New York, but the passive aggressiveness in Philadelphia, in San Francisco is terrible, terrible. And I prefer Philly to San Francisco in that aspect because at least people are aggressive as opposed to passive aggressive. But Adam, is it true that people in Canada are the most polite people in the world? Is that true?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that's total myth. Because you know what? Whenever I'm in the States, and especially whenever they're like the few times where I've been in like the southern states, people in the southern states are so nice. I mean, hell, under the hood, they might be like racist as all hell, but but they're super nice to me as a white male. So I can't complain.
Well, fair enough. As long as things are good for straight white males,
I know
that's all we need to worry about.
Yeah.
And speaking of straight white males, we are here on the podcast with Joel Tannenbaum of Bow United, Joel Tannenbaum of X-Friends, one of the legendary punk rockers from the 90s punk rock scene, a guy who's been kicking straight along up through today. He's an educated man. He's a punk rocker down at his core. He knows what to say, when to say it, what to do, and how to do it. Joel Tannenbaum, who just put out a brand new EP yesterday and a reissue of the first Plow United LP yesterday, both out on It's Alive Records. Joel Tannenbaum, has the new EP gone platinum yet?
Hi, John. Hi, Adam. Thanks for having me back, by the way. I'm willing to bet if by platinum you mean sold like pre-ordered 20 or 30 copies on the internet, yeah, I'd say platinum all the way.
Well, how about this, Joel? Robin Thicke's new album only sold 522 copies in England. Is it possible that you'll outsell Robin Thicke?
It's maybe not in England. I heard people don't like that guy for some reason. Is that true?
Yeah, because he's a prick.
Oh, yeah, that must be. I seem to remember reading that on Twitter. Ooh.
So, Joel, on the new what do you address on the new album? What's something the kids will really like on the new EP, that is? What's something that'll really catch people's ear?
Well, all the songs are pretty short. And I don't know, we say a lot of we say the same thing over and over again a lot. People seem to like repetition. So I'd say you got that. You got brevity and repetition.
That's well, all I need, really.
And it's called Delco after Delaware County, so we're hoping it's going to do real well in Delaware County.
Joel, how would you describe Delaware County, Pennsylvania, to the Punk News audience? And remember, we've got a worldwide audience. So Delaware County is the area that's right next to Philadelphia, if you know where Philadelphia is.
Sure. Okay, so Philadelphia has four surrounding counties, and Delaware County is definitely the poorest of the four. It's kind of, when you know, most people that you meet in Philadelphia, especially if you're hanging around the punk scene, didn't grow up in the city. Most of them grew up in one of the counties or somewhere else altogether. And Delco tends, you don't tend to meet too many people from Delco. Now, there's some people that are from Delco, and they tend to acknowledge each other and stick together when it comes to certain situations. If that makes any sense.
What does Delaware County mean to you, Joel?
That's a tough one, John. That's a little open-ended. Do you think we can narrow it down a little bit?
If someone's in Delaware County, what kind of food should they get?
Oh, boy. There's a Polish deli in Clifton Heights called Yoshi's. I would say you should probably check out the pierogi pizza at Yoshi's. It's pretty solid.
There's a Polish guy named Yoshi?
I don't know if there's a guy, or I don't know if it's named after anybody in particular. I'm guessing there was at some point.
Fascinating. I didn't know Yoshi was a Pole. I thought that was strictly a Japanese name.
Oh, yeah. Does that SH sound occur much in I guess it does. I guess it does in Japanese. Oh, also, of course, Tom Jones Family Restaurant in Brookhaven. That's a little closer to where I grew up.
Tom Jones. I've been to Tom Jones many times. Listen, people, if you're looking for the morning Blue Plate special, $4.95 breakfast, way too much food, Tom Jones right there on 352.
Yeah, it's also a good place. If you go in there Saturday morning at like 3 a.m., you can also check out some pretty intense human conflict. Pretty cool.
Well, there you go. Tom Jones Restaurant, the place of brawls, as it was in the famous novel. Joel, let's play a Plow United tune to whet the listener's appetite. What should we play? Should we play something from the EP? Should we play something back from the reissued first self-titled album? What should we play?
Oh, I didn't know we were doing this tonight. This is awesome. Let's say off of the first EP, let's keep it kind of let's listen to a song on the first side of the Delco EP called All For You. It's a song that our drummer Sean Rule wrote that we all really love a lot.
This is a brand new track called All For You off the new Plow United EP, Delco, and the record label is It's Alive. Check it out.
Because of you, I stood in that line. Because of you, I am my toes. Because of you, I always denied. Because of you, I doubted every single thing I ever felt. Because of you, because of you, because of you. In spite of you, I learned to push back. In spite of you, I found a way. In spite of you, I made it happen. In spite of you, through the darkness and the pain, it came out strong. In spite of you, in spite of you, in spite of you. On and then you'll notice how I feel. It's all for you. 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 My heart is true. And through and through, it's all for you.
And we are back on the Punk News Podcast. I'm down with the Plow United. I know editor Joe Pallone's down with Plow United. I think Adam White's down with Plow United. So in the vein of people being down with stuff, let's get this podcast started. First news story today is a band that has seen the true punk news slash blog hype arc, Fastlight Anthem. Everybody used to love them. Now everybody hates them. They've got a brand new song out from their album. The song is called Get Hurt. I think that's the name of the album as well. Frontman Brian Fallon said this about the track. With Get Hurt, we wanted to see where else we could go with the band. We thought it was time to change things up a bit. The song itself is similar to the feeling of a wreck you see coming, but long past the point where you can avoid it. So were you guys down with the Gaslight Anthem back in the day? Are you down with them now? What did you think of this track?
Well, I'll be, I have the luxury of not having to be diplomatic here. I don't know why I feel that Joel has to be diplomatic, but I won't. So I don't know. This kind of sucks. I'm going to come at it from that really enlightened perspective here. I don't know. I was never a Gaslight person. I was okay with the fact that they existed. You know, I didn't begrudge the fact that, you know, they were getting a lot of hype and people really seemed to be jazzed about what they were doing. It wasn't really for me, but hey, you know, people were really into it and that's great. This song in particular is super boring for me. I'm not against having something that's a little bit slower and pensive as a, you know, as a big song or a lead single off of an album or anything like that. But this one just does not do it for me in a way that engages me in any way, shape or form. And as I was listening to this, my biggest thought was, you know what, if Taylor Swift or one of these people was to have recorded this with like big pop production and would have made it like a, you know, a Billboard top 40 single kind of thing, it would really do quite well. So it's, you know, there's a hook in there, and it's a very, I guess, I don't know, it's not going to assault you in any which way. It's very pleasing, but it's not really what I'm looking for in a rock and roll song. So I don't know, the Gaslight Anthem is one of those bands that just travels on a track that I'm not on the same one of. So that's, you know, for people that are into this, I guess they're still going to be into this, but this is not making a fan out of me.
So there are definitely Gaslight Anthem songs that I like. I don't think I need to be as diplomatic as you maybe think I do, Adam. I will say this. I was actually totally riveted by this song, and here's why. It's like, so we all kind of watched the 80s come and go as a fashionable influence, but it was like a very particular segment of the 80s, like the Juno synthesizer, like early 80s, sort of like edgy, you know, new wave. This is like the other part of the 80s that nobody talks about. This song, seriously, and I really like this song. It sounded like it could have been like one of the songs on the soundtrack to The Money Pit or like Light of Day or something like that. It was like that late 80s. Something about it just fascinated me. And one of the punk news commenters, and of course, the punk news commenters were, you know, pointed, as I'm sure you guys saw, on this song. One of them said it sounded like a Tom Petty B-side, and they were insulting it. But I was like, no, actually, that's kind of why it's great. So anyway, that was my take on it.
Well, I do like the Tom Petty, especially earlier Tom Petty, but I was not down with this song. I mean, well, in some respects, placing this in, I mean, Gaslight Anthem, I guess, used to be a punk band, or they used to play with punk bands. They're not really a punk band anymore, and I wouldn't say this song is a punk rock song. Not that anything has to be punk, and not that I'm interested in defining punk, but what attracts me to punk, you know, the danger, the uniqueness, the novelty, the intensity, this has none of this. And actually, I think the reason that Joel liked it was the reason I disliked it. I mean, this really did sound like an 80s jam. Like, Joel says...
80s, late 80s.
Well, yeah, I mean, Joel was saying like Tom Petty. I was thinking more like Bryan Adams with a little bit more of a rock beat. I was not feeling this. And I actually interviewed this guy way back in the day. He was a cool dude, so I'm not really trying to bust him up too bad. But this is not what I'm looking for in music. And I was not that excited about this. But I'll tell you, Gaslight Anthem used to be the punk news darling. And this is not a phenomenon unique to punk news. Why do you guys think that so many bands, and we see this trend happen over and over and over again, start where everyone's like, oh my God, this is the greatest band I've ever heard. And it keeps going up and up and up till it peaks, and then it slams down and everybody says they hate the band. Is it that not that many people hate the band, just the people that do are more vocal? Or do people start hating the band? Is it because the band deviates from what they're doing? Is it because people get tired of them? Or is it because people just like to follow trends? Why do we see this arc happen time and time again?
I think that with Gaslight, and this is probably why I was a little bit harsh on them there, is
I back you, man.
No, but apologize
for that.
But the problem with them, and it's not their problem, but the problem with them is that they sort of even from the start existed on that line between, you know, yeah, they play with punk bands and they've got some stuff in their early records that are, you know, I guess falls a little bit closer to punk rock. They came up from our scene, let's say, but that's not really the kind of band that they are. And they're a band that's, you know, is skilled enough in writing the kind of songs that could resonate with a lot more people than, you know, a punk band could, that, you know, they're that kind of band. They always have been. And even in the early stuff, when everyone was really, really into them, you could hear on those records that, like, you know, these guys are, you know, they always seem like they're like one or two albums away from being on, like, you know, on mainstream rock radio alongside, you know, on like the Foo Fighters and whoever else. And that's always kind of how they've sounded. And like, I don't begrudge them going in that direction, but because they've always been on that precipice, when they do go that way, and I think this song is evidence of them going that way, you know, all the people that were latched onto them from the punk scene that don't want to go there with them are going to get very complainy about it. And I don't think it's sort of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing for them, because, you know, they started right on that edge, and didn't really take a lot for them to cross the line and to start doing more mainstream stuff. It would be different if, you know, if this was Bad Religion and they started recording stuff that got more and more and more mainstream in this way. But it's, you know, these guys were so close to it in the first place that it was just kind of like a weird place for them.
I think here's one more place you can maybe give them a little credit. Like, you know, every song on the album doesn't sound like this, right? And somebody had to decide which song they were going to kind of break the album with and put in the Rolling Stone website or whatever. And somebody, presumably in the band, had to be like, yo, let's use the song that sounds like a mid-tempo, like, Wang Chung ballad from 1988. Like, that is a baller move. Like, they were not scared. So I'm just saying, credit where credit's due.
I am going to give them that the album cover looks like a bum. So
cool.
I'm just not sure how I feel about that.
Adam, keep us rolling along, baby.
Is that how we're just going to leave it?
Well, let me put it this way. I think I was talking about the arc of bands' popularity, and we saw this happen many, many times. And actually, we're going to address this later on in the podcast, too, with one of my favorite musicians, aside from Joel Tannenbaum, because the Plow United career has just been up, you know? You know, like Madonna, if you will, or the Flaming Lips, or Morrissey. But the point is this: I think that a band is always damned if you do or damned if you don't with regards to a lot of people, because if they keep doing the same thing, it gets boring. But if they do something different, then people hate it. The trick is, to maintain that core fan base. If you want to maintain that core fan base, and sometimes it's not a great idea because your audience is too small to sustain you. And also, I mean, like, an artist has to do what an artist wants to do. It's not like an artist says, this is what will maintain my core audience. But to avoid that deadly arc, if you will, what you have to do, and you see this in Pitchfork, you see this in a lot of different review websites, is you have to deviate just enough that people expect that deviation, but not too much. And that, I mean, that's the key, and that's how bands, I guess, sustain that death arc. But on the other hand, Gaslight Anthem's probably bigger than they've ever been. So from a financial standpoint, they're doing all the smart moves. And if that's what they want to do artistically, well, that's cool. I don't think they feel beholden to the original fans that liked, you know, Sink or Swim or whatever. So I think that's the cause for that snapback, if you will.
That seemed to be the gist of the comments, too, that people really liked the first two records and have become increasingly unhappy since then.
Oh, the people. Well, I guess we're going to move on from Gaslight. I feel like I say the same thing every time Gaslight's on this show. I imagine people just kind of like fast forward the podcast through it when I start talking about them.
It's the band people want to talk about. I mean, even though people hate them, like Mass Intruder, Gaslight Anthem, Hot Water Music, and Lawrence Arms, that's what people want to hear us talk about. The problem is, Adam, that neither you and I are fans of really any of those bands.
I'm huge fans of Hot Water Music, but...
Oh, really?
But what is there to talk about? Okay, so... Gaslight, yeah. So, Pup, Canadian punk rockers Pup out of Toronto have posted a cover of one of my favorite songs, Ever Fallen in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Have by the Buzzcocks. That this was on the AV Club's AV Undercover series, where they invite bands into their studio and basically give them a list of songs and they can choose one to cover, and then that name gets crossed off, and then the next band in gets a shortened list of which to pick stuff. Pup sort of lucked out here because this is a really good fit for them. But anyway, so yeah, so there's a, you can see this video over on the AV Club. There's a link to it on Punk News. And the band is supporting their debut release, Pup, which Side 1 released in the US this year. We got it in Canada last year because we did. So yeah, I got some thoughts about this, but John, what do you think?
I was down, man. I think Pup's a cool band. I'm not a mega Buzzcocks fan, but I'm a pretty big Buzzcocks fan. I love the Howard Devoto Buzzcocks and magazine. But I thought this was cool. The trick with the cover, something that Melvins have mastered, is you don't want to do an exact cover, but a totally whacked out cover can be cool too. But if you put a unique spin on it, that's generally the best way to go. What I would say though is, like the AV Cover Club, it's a cool idea. Bands cover other bands. But on the other hand, why shouldn't bands just be able to play their own music? What does it say about society that people are more interested in hearing covers than they are bands doing originals? And I guess in a way that's a boon because of the way music has, I guess, been saved and archived. We have this gigantic collection of music since 1900. So there's so much good music out there already. We're able to interest people with covers. On the other hand, I guess, why shouldn't bands just do new stuff? There's lots of good new stuff out there too. I think people would do well to, jump in the deep end every once in a while. But I thought this cover was cool, and I think the series is cool, but I'm also equal. I think it'd be cool. What if they did like one original and one cover? I think that'd be kind of cooler, to tell you the truth.
So did I understand it right, though, that the list of covers gets shorter as the year goes on and the last couple bands in there get stuck with, I think it was Rush, they said?
Well, hey, that'll be, don't you be talking about crap on Rush on the Punkies podcast, because Rush is awesome. That's how it works. And actually, it led to one of the greatest ones ever. Last year, Gwar was stuck with Kansas, and it won like their top of the year because it was Gwar doing Carry On My Wayward Son, and it was hilarious.
That's awesome.
You know, there's one thing in this song that was really driving me crazy for a while. First of all, there's this, like, I think this is one of these songs that, like, it is in and of itself, like, on a purely abstracted level, such a fucking good song that bands that I don't normally like even can cover it, and as long as they're, not totally screwing with it, I still really enjoy it. Like, I think I heard a cover by, like, Anti-Flag a few years ago, and like, I have no interest in Anti-Flag at all, but I was like, hey, this is fun, I like this song. So it's one of those for me. I thought it was super distracting how the vocalist in this version, though, he was sticking that extra "that" in the chorus, which I don't know if anyone caught, but
ever fall in love with someone that you should have,
like, he wasn't just kind of like, he was sticking a "that" in there, right? And which, like, I think the words are there in the lyrics, but Pete Shelley doesn't really sing it when he sings it. And they're totally within their right to do it that way. But it's just one of those things, I'd heard the song so many times that just, like, having that in there was totally bugging me out the first time. But I can deal. I've recovered.
Just for grammar.
Yeah. Well, that is the Canadian thing. We have to make sure that the grammar is actually correct. Speaking of Canadian things, at the very end of this song, they break into, like a second and a half of YYZ by Rush.
Oh, nice.
So they don't do much of it because fuck, but that's
Adam.
Yes.
What are the last three letters of the alphabet?
In the case of the Rush song, it's a Z.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
I've been saying it was YYZ.
That's nice.
It's Z? Well, yeah. How do you say Z in Canada?
We say Z.
You do?
Yeah. YYZ is the
UK as well.
Yeah, it's the code for Toronto Pearson International Airport. That's for some reason all of the airports in Canada start with Y.
But how can it be Z, Z-E-D, if it's only one letter? That's what I want to know.
That's how we pronounce the letter. I don't know what the actual, like, the etymology of the way that Canadians pronounce Z is. I'm not even saying it's right. It's just the way that we do it.
That's how Jamaicans say it. That might be how English people say it, too.
It is, yeah. And what about W, John? Apply that logic to the letter W.
Well, it's two U's. That's where it comes from. I think it's Vikings that named it that, or Romans. I forget which.
Right.
Joel, where do you stand on Rush? Where do you stand on this cover?
I listen to a lot of Rush.
Are we Rush homies?
Apparently so. I'm picky though. I'm picky, and I got a real beef with Neil Peart for the Ayn Rand thing. But I did listen to a lot of, like, particularly I'd say between 2112 and like Signals. That's like the sweet spot for Rush with me, especially when I was a kid. I listened to those records a lot. I mean, especially if you're trying to play a bass, you know, it's going to come up.
You don't like Caress of Steel?
No, Caress is that's still in like the weird Led Zeppelin period, but it's, I mean, those albums have their charm. You know,
so, welcome back to the Rush podcast. Speaking of, so Joe, what do you think of this cover? Were you down with this cover?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great song. I've been hearing Pup a lot. A lot of people I know have been listening to them a lot. So it's like you get in somebody's car and they're like listening to Pup. So I don't know. It was a solid cover by a cool band. I'll be interested to sit down and listen to the record the whole way through. So yes, I vote yes.
Speaking of a record people are interested in hearing all the way through, Death From Above, 1979, have reunited. Not only have they reunited, they've released, I believe, their first single, but maybe not their first single, but an early single from their upcoming album. The track is called Trainwreck, 1979. The album, The Physical World, will be out on September 9, 2014. And I got to say, I don't want to be on the hate train on this podcast, but I didn't hate this song, but I didn't see what the big deal about this band was back in the day, and I don't see what the big deal about this band is now. One of the commenters said, I like this song, but it sounds like it'll be on a cell phone commercial in 2 months. I agree with that 100%. It's like, this is just like, I don't know, like indie-ish modern rock. I was not blown away by this track at all.
It sounded like the early 2000s to me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
An American Apparel or something.
Yeah, you know what? I hate to say it, but I agree with that. I was a big fan of this band when they were still kicking. And I think that, like, everyone that heard it, I think, was, you know, gave a lot of cred to the, what year was it? 2004, the full length that they had out, You're a Woman, I'm a Machine. And the nice thing about DFA at that point, and I don't hear that on this song, was there was something that was really, there was something a little sinister that came through with how their song sounded. And they were able to kind of turn that, like, really, really, like, crunchy bass thing into something that, I don't know, sounded very kind of mean and dangerous. Like, if you think of, like, even, like, the singles off of You're a Woman, I'm a Machine, like, songs with, like, Blood on Your Hands or something like that. Like there was some just kind of, like, nasty sounding stuff on that record, and I liked that for what it was. Now, that said, I don't know what kind of shelf life it's had, because I don't think I've listened to it in a long time. But I liked that for what it was at the time, and I guess I'm nominally still a fan of that record. This here, yeah, that cell phone commercial comment was absolutely dead on. This is it. It sounds like the band still, but there's really no teeth to it, and it's lyrically such a generic thing that, yeah. So cell phone commercial was where this could be. So that kind of sucks. I'm hoping the rest of the record is just totally nasty and weird, though. That would be great. But you know, holding out hope.
This is the band that got sued by James Murphy or whatever, right, and had to change their name. Is that right? Am I remembering
that
right?
Yeah, they were just a band out of Toronto called Death From Above for a long time, and then DFA Records in New York got on their case, so then they became Death From Above 1979, which has always been a super clunky name. But that's what happened.
I don't know is how come this band has never been sued by George Clinton? No one gets the George Clinton reference in this band's logo, and it's totally jacked. Does anyone get the George Clinton reference?
No, I missed it. It went over my head.
Yeah, but please explain.
You guys know Parliament is George Clinton's main band. It's a funk band. Parliament and Funkadelic is the other main band. Their last album is an album called Trombupulation, and the entire album is about having elephant noses for your own nose. The cover that features a guy with an elephant nose for his nose, and throughout the album is a picture of a guy with an elephant nose for his nose. And check this out. I actually went to my LP version of this record. The guy on the left of the Death From Above 1979, his nose is traced from that album cover, from the inside.
Huh. I guess you can't argue with that.
So George Clinton has an entire album about this, and George Clinton, once again, setting a foundation and not getting enough credit. Just like he was ripped off by his record labels, he's getting ripped off by Death From Above 1979.
Man, well, it's almost like George Clinton's not paying attention to contemporary music.
Well, speaking of contemporary music, Morrissey's yes. new album is now streaming. It's streaming in the USA. It's streaming in the UK. It's out next week on July 15th. The album is called World Peace Is None of Your Business, which is a classic Morrissey phrase. I've heard this. Oh, it was quite importantly, it was produced by Joe Ciccarelli, who has produced a lot of famous people, but he's also produced some pretty out there heavy metal. He produced Oxbow, and I think he might have produced Isis as well. So, So Joel, I know you're into this. I'll let you go first, and then I don't know if Adam wants to respond, but then I'll respond to your thoughts. Joel, take it away. You and Maz, how are you guys hanging?
I did not have high hopes. I think we might disagree on this, but I thought his output for the whole 2000s was pretty dismal. I went into this record expecting to be like kind of mildly embarrassed, and it just blew me away. I think it is definitely the best Morrissey solo record since Vauxhall, and possibly the best since Your Arsenal. That's my take on it. I was psyched.
I gotta say, I was really, really, really surprised about how good this album was. The listeners know I'm a Morrissey fan, although I think his tour cancellations were whack, which we talked about a couple podcasts ago. But I'm a big fan of Morrissey. Like I've always said, I always think his EPs are better than his albums, because on his albums, he kind of just does like the same 12 Morrissey songs in a row, while on his EPs, he does like two Morrissey songs and like two weird, wild, strange things.
Yeah.
This album is exactly what I wanted. It's Morrissey doing some Morrissey stuff, but a lot of weird stuff too. Like, you know, like just weird sounds out there, intros. My favorite Morrissey album is Southpaw Grammar by far, because that's like the strangest one. Like Morrissey just being Morrissey, I think it's boring unless you put something else in there. That's why Southpaw Grammar is so great. I would say this might be, I've only listened to this twice so far, but this is probably my second favorite Morrissey album. I wouldn't say any of these songs are my 10 favorite Morrissey songs, but as for a collection of songs, I love how out there this is, how dark some of the songs are, and I love how where Morrissey excels, where almost no one else even comes close, some people do though, is he has lyrics where he presents himself as a very, very mean, bitter person, like kick the bride down the aisle, which is the new, where he calls a bride a cow, which is so mean.
But, or he says, when you break your legs, don't come running to me.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. But the trick, where Morrissey is so skillful, when he presents himself as a hateful character or as a jealous character or as an envious character, he's able to present in a way where we really all do have those thoughts. So when he's saying, we hate it when our friends become successful, everyone has a little bit of that in them. And so Morrissey's saying what so many other bands are scared to say. So many bands want to present themselves as the good guy or the nice guy, or alternatively, like nu metal, they're bad guys and they beat up people and they have sex with chicks. Where Morrissey really, through almost a comedic facade or a dramatic facade, expresses feelings that we all have in a way that is both self-eviscerating but also fundamentally true. I think he nails it on this. There's one song where he's like, kiss me on the face, kiss me all over my face, kiss me on the face, kiss me all over my face, which I think is a weak track. But overall, I'll tell you what else is great, and I don't want to blush too much over this album, but the other thing that Morrissey is really good at, he's good at twisting reality to his own perception. There's a song on this album called The Bullfighter Dies, and the lyrics are something like the bullfighter dies and everyone cheers because everyone wanted the bull to survive, or something like that, which is not what happens at all. It's quite the opposite. If you go to a bullfight, people want to see the bull get killed, and they cheer when the bullfighter kills the bull. It's a pretty savage scene. So everyone knows that Morrissey is very pro-animal rights. So he's taking reality and flipping it to the exact opposite to what he wishes it would be, and he makes it a success story, albeit with a backdrop of a guy getting gored to death. That's why Morrissey is so fantastic and skillful. That's why this album is great. And it's why people forgive him after all his hijinks. Because when he delivers, man, he delivers.
I think that's the main thing that the album has going for it. Like the more concise pop songs, like the Bullfighter song and the University Stairs of the University, whatever, like those could be right off of Bona Drag. Like they're just these really, really tight songs. And then the more sort of ambitious songs, which I think a lot of times he hasn't been able to pull off so well. The more epic songs, I think, in this are all great. And I think the main thing is, like, he's a very angry guy, which you touched on, John, and that's always been there. But I think it's like, this is the album where at age 55, he finally found like the right targets. For the most part, like the album, like the, when he's talking about sort of like macro political stuff, like it actually lands like in the right place. It's I don't know. I was just so happy with this record. I was really surprised.
Is the Morrissey hate deserved? Adam and Joel, people hate Morrissey. Is it deserved?
No, I don't think so. I think that people have a problem with a public figure that doesn't quite fit into the, you know, into this culture where we have where everyone that we consider a celebrity has to on some level be our buddy. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Moz fits into that in the same way that like John Lydon doesn't fit into that. Mm-hmm. And I think people don't like him for that reason. I think that what's what makes him interesting, really. So is he like a gigantic prick? Probably, but that's okay. I'm not, you know, I don't have I can enjoy music from gigantic pricks. I don't have that as a prerequisite.
I think he is probably a pretty big prick in a lot of ways, but he's definitely not a hypocrite. And that's what you got to give him credit for. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's very serious about his principles. Apparently, he ends his shows now with just this really graphic, like, vivisection footage. Did you guys hear about this?
No, but I think that's cool. I mean, that's punk rock, baby. That's what conflict would do.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I'm not going to give you this sort of fake catharsis of going to see your favorite band play your favorite songs. Like, I'm going to leave you with this really disturbing imagery because it's something that I believe that you need to see.
Well, Morrissey, like, I would have been able to see that if you didn't cancel your last show, dickwad.
Yeah.
I'm pissed off now, Joel. Thanks a lot. Joel, play. Joel, what song you got? Give us a song. I'm so pissed off. We got to take a break.
So my favorite like punk rock band in America right now is a band from Greenville, South Carolina called Rubrics. I've seen them play 3 times in the past 6 months, and each time has been crazier than the last. Their music is strange. It's a really surprisingly organic mix of, I think, like straight up crust stuff that they're interested in, and also weirdly 90s pop punk, like, and they managed to make it work in this really organic way. And I don't think there's been a band that could blend influences like as effortlessly as them since Refused was first coming up. So I think they're DIY to the bone. They work really hard. They really go out of their way to take care of other bands. And they made a really amazing record this year called Alkalize or Die. And this is a song off of it called Styrofoam Dish Soap and Gasoline, which, as I think we probably all know, are the ingredients for making napalm in your home.
I know now.
Come on, you guys knew that.
Dick grow up, dick grow up. Fuck it, fuck my spank. I'm sorry for both this open gasoline. Don't be afraid, don't be afraid. Nobody's wrong with a bottle. So relatively clean. You can fuck with the desert.
And we're back. So that was Rubrics. That was teaching you how to make napalm. So that was cool. Thank you very much. All right. We're going to jump into our next story here. John, I guess I'll take this one, and you can give us your thoughts. So, Google, which is a search engine.
I hate Google.
Yeah.
I hate it. Here's my thoughts.
All right. So Google has acquired the playlist service Songza, or plus Songza, or I don't know, however anyone wants you to pronounce this stuff, for over $15 million. Google has stated, "We're thrilled to welcome Plus Songza to Google. Over the coming months, we'll explore ways to bring you what you love about Songza to Google Play Music. We'll also look for opportunities to bring their great work to the music experience on YouTube and other Google products." So that is something that I guess made some waves that they have done this. I got to admit that I've not heard of Songza ever. So, I'm out of it. John, what is this?
Well, first thing that I want to do is I want to start one of these companies that people buy for $15 million and you never hear of ever again. It can't be that difficult. But like didn't Facebook buy some company for like $2 billion that like no one ever heard of or anything?
I want to say that the ones that they bought recently, people have heard of.
Well, I've never heard of Songza, so I got to start one of these companies. You know, I don't know what we'll do. We'll stream music videos. That's what we'll do. I'll call it Videoza, and then I'll like put three videos up and sell it to Google for like $10 million. It'll be a steal. Anyways,
what I think is going on is this: you'll remember that Apple bought Beats about a month ago, a couple months ago. Do you guys remember that?
Well, Dr. Dre's like the richest man in the world now.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's like, so Apple's tried to turn iTunes into like a streaming type Spotify service, and it was a disaster. And I think when they realized it was a disaster, they went for a company that had that sort of software, but also had a hardware element, because that seems to be what Apple does. And so I can only assume now what's going to happen. I'm assuming that this is Google's response to what Apple did. And I'm also further assuming that in another couple of years, all of the current streaming services like the Pandoras and the Spotifys or whatever are going to be out of business. And what we're going to have instead is one giant streaming service owned by Google and one owned by Apple. That's my theory anyway.
Well, I agree with that. It's much like cable TV out here on the East Coast. West Coast is better. But out here, there's Comcast and like Verizon, and that's it. And Joel, you can speak for how terrible Comcast is.
Oh yeah, my building makes us get Comcast. We have no choice in the matter.
It's a terrible company. And the point is I'm scared of Google. Google is one of the most efficient companies at info tracking, and plus being completely invasive. Like it's so easy to give Google the rights to, you know, look at your emails, look at your addresses, and not even realize you're doing that. And worse, like, let's say your friend says, "Yeah, Google, you can read my emails." Then they've got all my emails to my friend. Then they've got all my addresses. Mm-hmm. Google scares the shit out of me. And I wish we would become less dependent as a society on Google. Further, I'm anti. I know people love streaming services, and I know it's a great way to learn about a whole lot of music. But the point is these companies at Google are getting money, and the bands aren't getting anything. They're getting like 5 cents, you know? I really wish that bands would stop licensing their music to these services and, you know, do Bandcamp or make an alternative where bands actually see return on their thing. Because the point is if everybody's listening to your music but nobody's buying it, well, what's the point? The point is everyone's listening to your music, but you have to sustain yourself, you know? And so
go ahead, sorry.
And so the point, and plus, I mean, but even furthermore, let's say you just want people to hear your music and you don't care about making money off of it. Well, why should Mr. Google make money off of your music? Why not, you know, Bandcamp or just put it up yourself for free? Why should Google get fat off your money? And also, I mean, I think it's encouraging, as I said last podcast, I think it's encouraging a renter society as opposed to an owner society, which I think is a very bad hill to go down. So I'm anti this. I'm anti streaming services. I think it's whack. Buy albums, buy CDs, buy records, buy cassettes. Don't stream. That's all I can say. I'm anti. Anti. And if I disappear next week, you know it was Google that did it.
Do you guys know anything about Bandcamp? Because I was thinking about this the other day. I don't. Like, I don't know who owns them or where their funding comes from. Because in theory, Bandcamp is like the positive alternative to all of this, but in practice, as far as I know, it's just another, you know, giant Silicon Valley startup.
So I had heard some, I'm just trying to think, because I had heard a bit about Bandcamp not too long ago. And yeah, I mean, of any of these kind of digital music services that are out there, they seem to be at least the one that is, I don't know, closer aligned spiritually with what independent musicians seem to be doing.
Bandcamp is owned by Bandcamp.
Is owned by Bandcamp.
You don't know who the investors are. I mean, the investor could be Apple. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I'm just looking it up right now because I had heard a little while ago about something about the people that had run it, and that I don't think it was kind of like the typical, you know, Silicon Valley super venture backed. We're gonna just trying to sell to Google so we can make our money back kind of animal. But
that's what I was
thinking. I don't actually have that information at my fingertips. All right, Bandcamp always seems to be the one that walks away from all of this without, you know, anyone casting a lot of shade on. And they're the one that I guess to me seems like it has the most sustainable business model of any of them. Like it may not be like as glamorous as some of these other music services that have popped up and then disappeared, but at least they're sort of predicated on, you know, we're going to sell songs and people are going to buy them. And, you know, that's not sexy, but it'll work to some degree. It might not be making anyone millions and millions of dollars, but it, you know, it's better than getting a royalty check for, you know, 10,000 plays on Spotify and someone's giving you 57 cents. So they've got that going for them.
The difference is, though, I think it's, you got to look at it more in terms in relation to iTunes, because what they're doing is similar. You know, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Bandcamp is selling you an MP3. And I think Bandcamp will probably evolve into something that functions more like a streaming service. But I have no idea what the royalty rates will be. For all I know, they won't be any better. I have no idea. I mean, for Bandcamp is definitely like more accepted in the punk scene. I'm sure you guys have noticed that, like, especially as you go more down the like DIY trail, everybody's cool with Bandcamp, but like that doesn't necessarily mean anything. You know what I mean? Like in the punk world, it's like people are cool with Waffle House, but not McDonald's. And that makes no sense. Like it's arbitrary.
Right. True.
Finance is the same thing.
I think a big part of it too, is that Bandcamp does give that avenue for actually selling the physical product too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something that you see pop out of the other things. We need John. This is your job. This is your punk news assignment, Mr. Features Editor.
All right, let's do it. Let's hear it.
Why is everyone cool with Bandcamp?
Let's do it. I'll do it. Screw it. Let's do it. I'll do it. I'll send out emails. Let's do it.
Get someone on the horn and have them, you know.
I'm doing this, Adam. You think I'm joking, but I'm not. I'm doing this.
I don't think you're joking.
Push me, Adam. I'm doing it.
This is my job. I'm a managing editor. Dole out shit for other people to do, right?
I think this is a great idea. I this is teamwork. This is what they call synergy. This is synergy, people. This is actioning happening on the Punk News Podcast Live as you listen. Listen, though, Adam, you know me. I'm always like, I hate Google. I hate Yahoo. I hate Twitter. You know, I'm always, you know, they're looking through my mail. Adam, I know you work in the tech industry. Do you feel personally assaulted when I attack these tech companies?
No, because when you look at the way that I intersect with the tech industry, I'm not on the glamorous end of it. Like, I'm a web developer. We build, you know, websites for people, and we build them one at a time, and we, you know, we don't make a lot of money doing them, but we actually, you know, people pay us for a service that we provide. So we don't exist in the, you know, super amazing, you know, everything that we do is going to save the world. So come invest lots of money into our startup so we can buy 500 foosball tables realm of the tech world. So no, that's cool. I have similar frustrations to the kind of ethereal bullshit tech stuff that you do. I'm a little bit more accepting that it's kind of part of our world now. I mean, you do complain about the tech industry a lot on your podcast.
But that's what it's all about. I'm taking it down from the inside.
Yeah.
Adam, you seem like you might know something like this. Tell me if this is true. My understanding is that most of the standalone streaming services are not profitable. They're not actually making money right now, right?
They're not making anyone money outside of themselves. Yeah, I don't think that the margin is very high. If they're making money, they're making money purely out of getting a certain volume of subscribers. But most of those streaming services that have gotten really popular are still backed by venture capital. So,
yeah.
You know, like I'm like the one that I use is Ardio, and I'm happy with it. It seems to work well, but I think I pay them like $4.99 a month for a more or less to me complete music library of the earth. So I can't imagine that that's actually translating into money anywhere. But what they want to do is they want to turn around and they want to say, look at our subscriber base. We have, you know, we're growing at, you know, 15% growth month on month, and we have X many million people signed up for us. So we're really hoping that a consortium of international bankers will give us $10 million to get to the next phase, whatever that is. Yeah. And then I don't know. And I don't know what the end game, and this is why I'm distrustful for a lot of this tech stuff, because I think for a lot of these people, the end game is that then Google will buy us. And then you have these people that start these companies that are basically serial entrepreneurs that then will go start something else and hope Google buys that. And it doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't necessarily seem real to me. So, you know, I'm, as far as like the tech world goes, I'm like a bricklayer. So
not to mention that I feel like a lot of the business model is kind of predicated on the idea that there's going to be unlimited cheap bandwidth forever. And I'm pretty sure that's not true, right?
Well, the costs on all that stuff tend to be trending down. So I wouldn't necessarily say that's what's going to fall out. I think what's going to fall out is just that, like, at some point it's going to take like one or two big public screw ups, just like we saw when like the tech bubble burst the last time. And then all these people that have their wallets open trying to like get the next app on board, they're going to go running scared. So then the companies that you have that like actually make money, but maybe modestly, like this is my, I'm assuming that Bandcamp is one of those companies, might be okay. Whereas the, you know, Spotify's or Ardio's or whatever of the world, I imagine are going to have a harder time if they don't have, you know, funding.
Right.
But hey, I don't know. I don't actually have any information here. I'm just spitballing.
Listen, you're kids, learning stuff. This is like school.
Listen, kids, you don't need to spend $10 or $15 a month to have access to the world's library of music. Take $30, go to the CD store, buy the first three Crash CDs. You're good to go. That's all you need. Speaking of something everybody loves, Dale Crover will temporarily join Off. That's Dale Crover of the Melvins. He's not going to be permanently drum with them, but while permanent drummer Mario Rubalcava sits out for about, I don't know, almost a month or so, more like 3 weeks, Dale Crover of the Melvins will drum for Off. I gotta say, I'm excited. I actually might make the drive down to Washington, D.C. just to see this. I don't think, honestly, I mean, Off is pretty fast, you know, hard and aggressive. I don't think it's going to sound that much different with Dale as opposed to Mario. But Dale is a phenomenal drummer, and I kind of just want to see this happen, even if it doesn't sound that different.
This story was created for you.
It really was.
It takes, like, most of the John, like, Jello isn't involved in this story.
Yeah, but actually there's two dates with the dwarves.
Oh, see?
Oh, geez.
What do the rest of us have to say? Like, if you just want to...
Yeah,
just
I thought
like
the same
breathe
thing.
Heavily like for the next few minutes.
Yeah. What was that, Joel?
I said I thought the same thing. I was like, this is the John story. This is like the purpose-built Gentile story.
Yeah, I mean, what a phenomenal cohesion of different bands. I think it's going to be awesome. I mean, really, what else can you say? I mean, Dale Crover is the man. He really is one of the greatest drummers of all time. It's going to be awesome. And if I do go to Washington, D.C., which I probably will, this will be the fifth time I've seen Keith Morris in 12 months.
Wow.
I got to go. Because I saw Flag twice, and I saw Off twice. I think I'll have to go. I mean, it's the day before my birthday, so I'll probably go. This will be cool.
Do you think Keith Morris is creeped out by you?
Yeah, he is. not to pat – well, hell, I'm going to pat myself on the back. I fought hard for this. I got to interview Keith Morris for Rolling Stone. I think it's one of the best Keith Morris interviews ever. At the Philadelphia show, Keith Morris, like, I was standing there. Keith Morris walked into the bathroom, and he's like, "Wizzy," and he walks out. I'm like, "Keith, I interviewed you for Rolling Stone and Punk News. What's happening?" He goes, like in that classic Keith Morris voice, "Thanks, man." And he bolted for, like, the backstage area where I could talk to him.
I'm glad that you can take that with humor and that you didn't like go like knock your effigy over or something.
Well, I can because Keith Morris is a genius. He's I might argue, not definitely, but I might argue that Keith Morris is the greatest punk frontman of all time. He's a little weird. When you're that great, you almost everyone's a little weird. The only people that are that great and aren't weird are like Joel Tannenbaum and like
and Mischief Brew at this point.
And Eric Peterson of Mischief Brew. I mean, look at Jello. Jello's the man. He's weird. Look at the Melvins. Buzz Osborne's the man. He's weird. You know, look at Jack Terrycloth of World Inferno. He's the man. He's weird. So you got to give Keith Morris that slack. But also, like, I think he was focusing on whizzing. And I almost ambushed him because I wanted to say hi to him, like, while he walked past. So he might not have even heard me. You know, he might have just heard me blurting out stuff, you know. So, I mean, look at this way. I've interviewed Keith Morris, like, 8 times now. And he's super cool with me on the phone. So I think I just kind of, like, shocked him and scared him, you know. I hope.
I'm not surprised by any of this.
Anyway, it was great. Speaking of things that are great, Cassie Ramone of the Vivian Girls is putting out her debut solo LP. She also had a band called The Babies. They put out 2 records and a live album. And she's put out, she put out 1 split solo 7-inch and 1 solo 7-inch. And her new album is going to be called The Time Has Come. Ariel Pink plays bass in some tracks. Everyone knows that I'm a big Vivian Girls fan. I'm a big La Sera fan. I'm a big Babies fan. But I specifically put this in here because I think the Vivian Girls were really the standard for that early, you know, blog. Oh, this is the greatest thing ever. And then they slammed them so hard. I feel so bad for Cassie Ramone because after they built the Vivian Girls up after that first EP, the critics just savaged her. Not even like they're like, oh, she's off key. She sounds horrible. A, she sounds great. I think she's a great, unique singer. But they were just so mean to her. I don't know why they were so mean to her. It's not, you know, so. Anyways, I'm excited for this. I don't know if you guys have any feelings or any comments on why I think they were, like, did she deserve the meanness or were they just all ganging up on her? I have no idea. So I'm excited for this record, though.
I was a big Vivian Girls fan. I totally want to hear this. I haven't heard any of her solo stuff, I think, yet. You may have played something from Mario Pink on the show before, so I may have heard one of those, but...
No, I probably played The Garden produced by Errol Pink, I think.
So I haven't. So anyways, yeah, looking forward to this. I can cast no shade on Cassie Ramone.
No shade. I actually only listened to them for the first time, really seriously, after the first time I was on the podcast, when they also came up and were a new story. And I'm into it. It's cool. It does remind me a little bit of these kind of forgotten indie pop bands from the late 90s, mid-late 90s, like the Eilers set. You guys ever listen to the Eilers set?
No, I do not. I'm not aware of them.
I might have listened to some Eilers set, some Pound Sign. They were all from around the Bay Area.
There's a little bit that's like in that sound that reminds me of, there's a bunch of stuff that was coming out of Vancouver in the... Yeah. Well, I mean, like there was all that kind of like twee pop stuff that was coming out of Vancouver, but not quite that. There were some garage bands that were there, and I want to say like the early 2000s. That I'm just trying to think the one. There was a band called The Cinch that was out of there that had a record out on Dirtnap. And some of that stuff kind of lines up with what Vivian Girls was doing a little bit to me, but you know, it's generally a style that I'm a fan of. So
yeah, I've actually heard 3 of these songs because I don't know if the re-recordings on the album. Actually, I'm not sure if all 3, but at least one of the songs she's released on a 7-inch, the song I don't really want to go. It actually does. I mean, but it sounds like Vivian Girls because she wrote most of the Vivian Girls tunes, but it's actually more jangly guitar garage rock than it is kind of that like revved up girl group punk rock. I thought it was a really cool track because it sounds like she's talking about like she doesn't want to like go hang out with her friend thing. But then halfway through the song, there's like this sound effect, and you realize that she's talking about she doesn't want to be abducted by aliens, but you don't realize that in like the first half of the song. So I thought it was cool, man. I think she's cool. I don't know her. I mean, I interviewed her once. I don't know her personally, though, but I think she's a fairly sensitive person, and I think that's kind of like why like you heard a lot from the Vivian Girls, and they just fell off. Because, I mean, if you read some of those reviews, they are just so mean. Like, and I don't even mean like being critical. I just mean meanness for the sake of meanness. I don't know why there's meanness like that in the world. Joel, why are people mean?
Okay, yeah, I'm sure we can knock that one out. I don't know, but I do think that the internet has opened up like lots of new venues for meanness that didn't previously exist.
So have you ever had to deal with meanness in regards to either of your bands personally?
Not on the level that you guys are talking about. I mean, it's one of the nice things about not that many people caring is that you don't have to deal with that level of trolling.
Better question, Joel, though. You certainly have had people give you negative comments somewhere on the internet about your bands, correct?
Oh, sure, sure. It happens. It doesn't happen very often. I think the first rule is to ignore. Ignoring is almost always the way to go. Every once in a while, you need to respond, but usually that's when the person's attacking somebody else that you care about. But no, as a general rule, you ignore and you just figure that John, I feel like, not to deflect this back to you, but I feel like you've got this whole, philosophy of, trollology.
I do.
A couple times. And I think it's more thought out than mine. What is at the core? What is at the core of the being of the troll?
Here's it with the core of the being of the troll is two things: boredom and not envy, but an embarrassment of not having done something yourself. If you look at trolls on the internet, and I've researched many trolls, it all comes down to really they all share this in common: 100% of trolls, 100%, not 99%, 100% of trolls haven't done anything of interest in their entire life. They're not in a band. They haven't done any writing. They usually work jobs that aren't specifically rewarding, like they work in the financial sector, or they, work in a sales job, which isn't very fun, like selling floor tile or something like that. Mm-hmm. They rarely have jobs that are what you would say is a fun job. Also, if you look at their personal interests almost always fall within what the group, if you got 100 people together, their interests would overlap the most with the group's interests than most other people in the group, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So if you look to trolls, that's who they are. And so anytime a troll, insults you or whatever, I mean, Joel, have you ever gone on the internet and heard a band and said, this band sucks, I hate this band, you guys should just quit? Have you ever done that?
I don't think I have.
Right. So that gives you the idea of the kind of person that does that. It's a weird persona. Joel, last question. Has anyone ever said anything to you negative in person about your bands?
Maybe in the 90s.
Mm.
18 years ago. But again, that's another thing that's been kind of obliterated by the internet. It's made people much less in the corporeal world, people have become much, much less confrontational.
I agree. And that's one thing I miss about the 90s. I miss that in Ice Cube's first album.
Yeah.
Let's speaking of Ice Cube, let's wrap this up. Speaking of hip hop, that is, Death Grips have broken up. Death Grips, the controversial band that put out an album with Bjork, but Bjork isn't actually on it. The band that planned an entire tour and planned not to show up at that tour. Death Grips, the band that played a concert via Skype. They've broken up. Here's what they said. They said, "We are now at our best, and so Death Grips is over." So did you guys like this band? Was it all hype? Is Death Grips worthy, not worthy, should Death Grips get the notice and acclaim and press that people give them?
I actually have known nothing about Death Grips, John. This is another you one. Yes. I'm going to go with yes.
Good enough.
So, like Adam, I just kind of had to learn about Death Grips while preparing for this podcast.
Do you guys not read the internet? I thought that everybody talked about the band Death Grips. Is it just me? Is the reason that I think this band is popular just because I know about them?
Potentially.
No, man, the internet's like Philadelphia. There's a lot of different neighborhoods that are close together, but people in the different neighborhoods don't really talk to each other. So I listened to it and I was like, oh, this reminds me of the intellectual hip hop from the early 2000s, Aesop Rock or whatever, but a little crazier, I guess. And I don't know. It's cool. And I think in general, just in principle, I'm cool with anybody whose stuff veers into performance art, where they're doing stuff that genuinely screws with how the artist and the audience are supposed to interact. So yeah, if put it to a vote, I'll vote for Death Grips.
Fair enough. You folks heard it here first. Punk News is pro Death Grips. Adam White, hit us with a song. Is it Death Grips?
Well, it wasn't going to be Death Grips, but okay. Anyway, so on the last show, we talked about how great Ottawa is and how many good bands are coming out of Ottawa. So I'm going to stay on that train here. So this is from a record that came out this year. It was a self-titled full length from the band Average Times, which is out of Ottawa. They released it in Europe on P-Trash, the great garage rock label, and in Canada, at least on Horsehead Records. So this song is called Wasted on Wine. It's got this great garagey, buzzcocksy thing. It's got boy-girl vocals. It's just all around fun. So here you go. This is Wasted on Wine from Average Times.
Wasted on Wine. I was down with that track. I always like songs that have the title Wasted. He's something else. Wasted blank blank. Everyone knows Black Flag had the song Wasted. They've got the compilation Wasted again. Great song. Adam White, great choice. Great choice.
I'm glad grammatically it matched up with your interests.
I go by all songs by grammar. Adam White, thank you for being on the podcast tonight. Did you have on tonight's podcast talking about Death Grips and Morrissey?
I love exposing my ignorance to people publicly. So, yes.
That's what I do every day. Joel Tannenbaum, the man of Plow United, the man of ex-friends. Joel, I think you have at least 3 hot concerts coming up within a month.
Two. I think we got 2. Sorry.
I believe you have 3, Joel.
What's the third one?
Don't you have like a solo ex-friends acoustic set?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Oh, is that top secret? Did I?
We do, actually. That's actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. It's a part of the West Philly DIY Skillshare weekend that they're doing up at Lava Space.
I thought it was at the warehouse.
The Skillshare is at the warehouse, and then the concerts that accompany it are at Lava. So, yeah, X-Friends is going to play an acoustic set.
You sure? I almost went to the wrong place.
Maybe. I should double check. But it's a great thing that they're doing, and it's a benefit for some great organizations. So yeah, man, that.
And Joel, where can people come see Plow United? People are jonesing to see Plow United. You say, Joel, Plow United once a year is not enough. They need the PU juice. Where can they get the PU juice?
Oh man, they can get the juice at Asbury Lanes on Friday, July 18th, and Saturday in South Philly at Boot and Saddle on July 19th.
Well, kids, I'll be there. Come give me a daps. Joel Tannenbaum, thank you so much for being on the Pung News podcast. Your educated, informed opinions are always highly treasured right here.
Thanks. It's fun. Thanks for letting me come back. I actually really enjoy this.
And as always, you can reach us at podcast@pungnews.org. I got tons of mail I got to get. So we'll get to that next week. Tons of mail. This is John Gentile. Thanks again for listening, kids. Pung News podcast out.